Welcome, everybody, to Math of the Match podcast. I'm your host, Tim. Normally, I would have Lawrence here with me, but Lawrence is actually traveling this week, so he will not be on. But I do have all his information he sent along, so I can read it out to you. I don't know if this is going to make this episode super short or somehow longer, which would be strange. But if you're not familiar with this podcast, basically Lawrence and I will outline the last week of wrestling, tell you where to go, what to see, what was good, what was not, what you can go back to, what you must check out, and also kind of let you know real math, shoot math, if you will, as to what is really good, because we see too many different websites, podcasts, etc. Not that they're not good, but their math doesn't make any sense to where their numbers don't add up, can't add up to the grade they end up giving a show or a pay-per-view, etc. So, we've created hard math. So, if you're wondering, we don't always go over this, but I'll tell you, our criteria on our 100-point system includes match length, entertainment, storytelling, the finish, the actual wrestling. Are there logical spots? Is it fun? Does it leave me wanting more? Does the pre- or post-match build up to anything? And does the crowd give half a damn? So, normally Lawrence will kick us off, but I'm going to kick us off reading Lawrence. And so Lawrence would normally start us off with Raw. And so I will read you his notes. And I will do my best not to do a Lawrence impression. He would hate that. And I probably don't have a good one. So, we're going to go to Raw. This is the March 11th, 2024 episode of Raw. It kicks off with a Drew McIntyre segment, promo segment. This promo had more quality heel work from McIntyre here, including the line, "Say what if you're glad I took out CM Punk," in response to the crowd starting to what his promo. Seth didn't let this segment go unanswered as they continue to build toward Mania. Both their story and Cody's, which Seth remains attached to, packed with storyline, the through lines all in place. This was a solid opening segment, which Lawrence gave a 92. I agree. Just hindsight here, I did watch Raw and I did watch Dynamite, so NXT is the only one I'll be a little in the dark on. So I agree, this was a great segment. Then we go to Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan. Took a little time for this match to get rolling, but once it settled into rhythm, these two delivered a strong back-and-forth contest that did as much to put over the tenacity and toughness of Liv as it did to keep Becky rolling ahead of her Mania title match. Rhea showed up post-match before Morgan could leave, and it was clear that her involvement in the title picture isn't over with this loss. She threatened to take everything the champ loves before leaving Rhea and Becky to exchange words in the ring. Later in the night, Nia attacked Liv and Becky backstage when Lynch approached Morgan to show respect for their match and shake her hand. Becky threw out a challenge for next week. Later still in the show, Lynch vs. Jax, Last Woman Standing. Lawrence did give this Lynch vs. Morgan match a 91. Very good match, I do agree. Then we got Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupree versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. This had no obvious build and barely any time to work with. What was clear by the end was that Candice, and likely Hartwell by proximity, are trending heel, and WWE is leaning into the hate that Dupree has been getting at house shows by giving her a storyline centered around it on TV. If the heel edge gets Candice more TV time and Dupree's story gets to play out, then this has the potential to elevate two underused stars in the women's division. And for that, despite being a squash, and not a particularly good one at that, this match still gets a reasonable grade, which would be a 75, and I think that's fair, because this is very, while the match itself isn't very great, and there wasn't a ton of actual wrestling, it hit all the sports entertainment check marks you could get for a match. Then we got an interview segment with Michael Cole interviewing Cody Rhodes in the ring. This interview segment happened live and in the ring, as it should, and it delivered. Michael Cole played devil's advocate here, questioning Rhodes about slapping The Rock and trusting Seth Rollins, which I appreciated, by the way. Cody answered with poise and relatability before hearkening back to the last time he and Cole shared the ring for an interview. He redefined the story, bringing the fans into it and listing off his inspirations to finish the story. He teared up talking about his mother and his wife, then closed the segment addressing Roman and telling Cole he would finish the story at WrestleMania 40. Lawrence gave this segment a 95. He was into it, man. I was less into it, to be perfectly honest, but I thought it was... It's still perfect for advancing the story. No pun intended. Then we get the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane, who are the women's tag champs, defending against Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. This was a good tag match that protected the challengers in defeat with a little interference from Dakota Kai at ringside to set Baszler up to take the double-team finish for the champions. Both teams came away looking good, but Zoe's fluidity of movement in the early portion of the match was some of the most impressive work on display here. Absolutely. It wouldn't be shocking to see these teams run it back as soon as Mania. I would love that. Gave this match an 88. Then we head over to R-Truth versus Damian Priest. Despite an attack by Priest before the bell, this match actually had some back and forth. DIY got involved on the outside to keep this mostly fair, but Finn and JD showed up to attack Ciampa and Gargano, leading Truth to drop a submission hold to make the save. When he returned to the ring, he ate a South of Heaven, which sealed the win for Priest. Yeah, Priest can't really lose to R-Truth right now, especially if he's going to remotely cash in that briefcase, which I imagine has to happen soon. He gave this an 87. Then we got a Jey Uso promo. Jey wasted little time getting to his point, calling out his brother Jimmy for a match at WrestleMania 40. Short but effective, he closed the promo telling Jimmy he was going to knock the yeet out Jimmy's ass, which is fun. Gave it an 87. Then we go to our gauntlet match to determine the number one contender for Gunther's WrestleMania challenger for the IC title. So we have Ricochet versus JD Madonna. Then next it would become Ricochet versus Bronson Reed. Reed would win, taking on Sami Zayn. Zayn would take on Shinsuke Nakamura. And Sami Zayn would, in the end, defeat Chad Gable. So let's go through it. Opening with JD versus Ricochet was a good showcase for the Judgment Day member, who tends to get the odds stacked against him when he gets matches of late. This pairing made him look like a reasonable contender, which it really did. The two starting competitors wrestled for quite a while, which is a pleasant surprise given how this style of match frequently gets booked, with rushed falls early that can make the eliminated superstars look weak or foolish. Instead, it took beyond 10 minutes for Ricochet to knock off McDonough. His reward, Big Bronson Reed. Ricochet took the fight straight to Reed and even managed to kick out of the bigger man's offense once before falling in short order to the tsunami. While much shorter than the opening pairing of this match, the quick progression was logical after the war Ricochet endured to get the first fall. Sami Zayn entered next to face Bronson Reed. Michael Cole pointed out that Zayn was all day into a religious fast heading into his gauntlet, giving underdog sentiment to the underdog from the underground. Zayn was able to capitalize on the hubris of Bronson and finished him with a sunset flip powerbomb off the ropes. Despite getting a quick win, Zayn got attacked by Reed before Shinsuke could get to the ring. He ate a tsunami from the big man. This one was a little fast, but it put over the need for Zayn to outwit Reed to get the win. Shinsuke rushed to try and finish Sami off, but Zayn hit a quick roll-up to slow his momentum. Things evened out into a back-and-forth that ultimately saw Zayn finish his rival with a haluva kick. Gable hit the ring and refused to take advantage of Sami while he was down, instead picking his opponent up and waiting for him to be ready. The final two men in this gauntlet match had plenty of time left on the show to put together their portion of the bout. They took every moment of the last 15 minutes of the show to decide. After several high drama near falls and a lot of time in the ankle lock, Sami pulled out a reversal to Gable and clinched a roll-up victory from the jaws of defeat. Not sure where we go from here for Chad Gable, but hopefully he stays in the hunt somehow. Which, this matchup, as I scroll back up, got a 95 from Lawrence. This matchup was really awesome. The internet is very divided if Sami should have won or if Chad Gable should have won. I wanted Chad Gable. I believe Lawrence did as well. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But I'm very curious what they do with him. I'm sure he'd be great as a heel. Like, it'd be easy to heel turn him now, but I don't want that. I wanted that babyface win for him. So I don't know. Maybe he'll find a way back in. But your overall show score for Raw is an 88.75. Really good Raw. Next, we head over to the March 12th edition of NXT. Your opening bout is the LWO, Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, taking on OTM, which is Bronco Nima and Lucian Price. The first of three tag matches to determine three teams to compete in a triple threat to determine the number one contenders for the NXT tag titles at Stand and Deliver. LWO got the win after Del Toro assisted Wilde in a 450 splash from the middle of the apron off the top rope. Both LWO members were impressive, as usual here. That match got an 84. Then we go to our Roxanne Perez promo. This was some of the strongest promo work Roxanne has had since debuting in NXT. She laid out the past year's worth of frustration leading to last week's attack on Lyra Valkyria. The crowd wasn't fully behind this, and it was a little drawn out, but it didn't lack focus. The Prodigy called for Ava to strip Lyra of the title and award it to her. Ava did show up, but refused the request before Tatum Paxley arrived and had to be held back to prevent her attacking Perez to end the segment. This promo got an 86 from Lawrence. Uh-oh, now we're going to Lexus King versus Robert Stone. Man, Lawrence, you really trying to like Lexus King. Let's see what happens here. This was better than most of what we've gotten from King so far. All right, we're already off to a good start. This was essentially a squash, and the post-match save for Stone by Von Wagner means this is likely leading to another match between him and Lexus King. The short time of this helped it not overstay its welcome in the fans' eyes, and Stone made for a good sympathetic ragdoll for King to garner some heat. Yeah, like I said last week, Robert Stone is great. If you've never seen his Robbie E gimmick in Impact, he was great as a bro. That match got a 78. Now we're moving on to Obafemi versus Brooks Jensen for the North American title. Jensen got very little offense across this extended squash. Near the end, Josh Briggs came out to try and motivate his partner, his former tag partner, but the North American champ tightened his control on the match and finished Brooks off for a successful defense. He gave this a 79. Then we move on to Gigi Dolin versus Ariana Grace. This stipulation here, as outlined last week, was that if Grace won, she would get to give Dolin a makeover and clean up her language. I love this. This was pretty slow, and the crowd seemed down. At the finish, Grace hit a low blow behind the ref's back, only for Dolin to respond in kind after the ref turned around. Commentary claimed the ref used their discretion on the legality of a low blow here, where Taz, there he would have had something to say about Lady Yambags. Either way, Grace played it up, and their story continues. Lady Yambags. This match got a 74 from Lawrence. Oh, Taz. Then we move on to Kiana James and Izzy Dame versus Thea Hale and Fallon Henley. Earlier in the night, Kalani Jordan had offered to team with Hale, but just before the match started, Jordan was attacked backstage. Hale was spared from a handicap match with the arrival of Henley. JC Jane showed up late, continuing to tease the split from Chase U and Thea Hale. Jane pulled Fallon out of the way of some offense on the outside, causing Hale to eat a boot, setting up the finish. After the match, Hale cut a promo, setting her friendship with JC aside and announcing a return to her old Chase U self. The old Thea Hale is back, bitch. Gotta love that. This match got an 81. Now we head to Ridge Holland versus Sean Spears. The story here was Spears trying to get Ridge to lean into his rage, frequently goading his opponent with little regard for winning the match. It seems unlikely they'll be done with this story after this match alone. Spears put Holland away with a C4 onto a chair. Yeah, I like the chair as a gimmick still for Spears. It's very good. He got an 82 here. We go to a Trick Williams promo. This felt a little long, but Trick is the hottest name in NXT right now. Pretty standard fare, setting up for Trick vs. Mello at Stand and Deliver. The end was strange with Noam Dar in metaphor. Showing up to confront Williams, Dar intent on stealing Trick's hype. The closing moment of the show, a lip lock between Trick and Lash Legend before he tossed the heels from the ring. Well, that got a 90 from Lawrence. That's an interesting thing to happen. I love Noam Dar, and I love Metaphor, so we'll see what happens with that. Overall, that show got an 81.75. Now we move over to AEW Dynamite. This is big business in Boston. What on earth could that ever mean? Well, we kick it off with what we thought we'd kick it off with, the debut of Mercedes Moné in AEW. Mercedes Moné made her expected debut to start the show and didn't waste much time addressing what's on the horizon for her in AEW. After reveling in the love of the fans and the moment of finally being back in a wrestling ring, she turned her attention to Willow Nightingale. I love that part. Her opponent back when she was injured during the tournament for the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Women's Championship. That was a good match until it went wrong. At the end of this, she got an All Elite graphic as confirmation that she is officially signed with AEW. Not a huge fan of the entrance music, me either, but definitely a huge fan of Mercedes being healed and back on television. Hopefully she doesn't join the list of big signings getting lost in the shuffle. I doubt it. There was some great video on the internet. Bayley and I think Naomi were there to root her on, and Bayley was just like with her iPad recording the whole thing, just like happy mama kind of moment. It was pretty great. Next up, you get Samoa Joe taking on Wardlow for the AEW World title. Wardlow, of course, won his match at Revolution, which made him the number one contender. Both of these men are notably agile considering their size, and they both sold this like they're sold in like this. Oh my God, reading. Both of these men are notably agile considering their size. Lawrence, I'm so sorry. And they both sold in this like their opponent was a true challenge to them. Joe retained his title, putting Wardlow to sleep, the first chance he got to put in the Kushida clutch. Swerve arrived after the match with a chain, but Joe slipped away unharmed as Swerve's music played him out. Where Wardlow goes from here will determine if his character's reboot succeeds or flops like the other times he's had his momentum halted by the man on top. It's very true. I was shocked Wardlow just ate so much shit here. This match got an 86 from Lawrence. Next, we have the Young Bucks, which is Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, not Matt and Nick, please, full names, and Kazuchika Okada taking on Eddie Kingston, the Bastard Pac, and Penta El Cerro Mierdo. This was a standard trios match that served the dual purpose of getting a lot of talent on TV in a single segment and setting up for Okada to make it clear he wants Eddie's titles. Nothing much to say beyond that. It's true, this match was a little more boring than I expected it to be. I was very surprised. Did get an 85, though, from Lawrence. Then we go to a Will Ospreay interview. Will Ospreay is a strong promo, especially considering he hasn't really needed to be to this point in his career, having done most of his work till AEW either on the indies or in Japan. He used his time here to hype his upcoming match with Bryan Danielson, a task he succeeded at, whether the match needed the hype assist or not, which it didn't, but I appreciate it. And Danielson will continue to hype it as well later on. He got 93 on this promo. Next up, oh boy, this is Lawrence's dude, probably his favorite. We got Jay White taking on Darby Allin. Darby made his entrance for this match with a shift in entrance gear and demeanor, and it wouldn't be shocking to see an evolution of this character when he returns from climbing Mount Everest and following the retirement of Sting. I got news for you. He's not going to climb Mount Everest this year. We'll get to that at the end. With this being less than 2 weeks from the brutality that was the Icon's final match, Darby was heavily taped up and selling injuries from the fight even before the bell. Jay White focused his offense on the obvious targets and came away with a quality win over one of AEW's big players. The finish saw Allin miss a coffin drop onto the apron and narrowly beat a 10 count, only to immediately eat a Blade Runner for the pin. I did like that that segment, that sequence. After the match, Bullet Club Gold hit the ring and proceeded to lay a beatdown on Allin, leading the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass to intervene. Jay and the Guns dropped their now former teammates for stopping the attack. With that, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang has ended almost fast enough that if you ordered a shirt on the day they formed, you may not have had a chance to wear it while it was relevant. It's like Y2AJ all over again. They finish their attack on Allen's leg to close the segment, effectively writing Darby off TV. Yeah, what actually happened is they did that to his foot, and they broke most of his toes for real when they did it. So if you look online, Darby Allen has shared his scans of his foot. It's pretty gross. Next up, we got Chris Jericho and Hook versus the Gates of Agony, which is Toa Leona and Bishop Khan. Early on in the match, Excalibur made sure to dub Jericho and Hook as Lion Hook on commentary. I'm all for team names, but not every team needs a name within the first three times they tag, particularly when both members are singles wrestlers. And it doesn't always need to be a moniker mashup. Won't be shocked to see a shirt if there isn't one already, and if Bang Bang Scissor Gang's fate in the previous segment is any indication, to say nothing of Hook's former tag teams, then said shirt's print run won't be long for this world. This was a fine match and surprisingly saw Jericho eat a lot of the offense from Gates of Agony before tagging in Hook, who looked dominant against their two larger opponents. The match ended with Jericho applying the walls to Khan to open the door for Hook to finish applying the red rum for the submission victory. Backstage after commercial, Jericho challenged Hook to a singles match for next week. Lawrence gave this a 78. Now we move on to Rio versus Willow Nightingale. Man, these two are both crowd favorites. Willow looked to avenge Chris Statlander's loss to Rio from last week in the main event for Dynamite. There were some fun sequences in this match that played in the size disparity between the competitors. At the end, Willow was able to halt Rio's offense and planted her with a huge Babe with the Powerbomb for the big win over a former Women's World Champion. Julia Hart and Sky Blue attacked her after the match, which led Mercedes Moné to make the save, firmly putting the CEO into a program with one of the two women's champions in AEW. It also gave her a chance to show off a second ring gear look for the night and plant the TBS champion with her finisher, which is such a weird finisher, in my opinion. Me, not Lawrence. And this got an 89. Overall, the show, AEW Dynamite, will get an 86.86. So really strong stuff here. With that, we will move on to me. But, no, we'll do it at the end. We'll go back. I'll do it proper, damn it. All right, and now for my thoughts and opinions for the week. I'm going to kick us off with TNA Impact, the 14th. Of March 2024. We are going to kick things off with Mustafa Ali again taking on Chris Sabin for the X Division Championship. This is Sabin's contractual rematch. Sabin cheated a lot here. Very bizarre because they both were doing very heelish things. Sabin was just coming from a point of frustration between all his dealings with the Good Hands, with the Grizzled Young Vets, and the implosion of the Time Splitters, which, you know, may or may not be fine, but he's just frustrated with everything. He was pulling his hair, he was doing all kinds of heel tactics, and the ref, I just felt like there was two heels in the ring, and it flowed weird, because Sabin's nowhere near as good a heel as Mustafa Ali. We did get feet on the ropes for the pin here, which I did like, as Mustafa Ali does defeat Chris Sabin. Very good match, though. Less high-flying than you would think with these two. Just a lot of technical wrestling. Pretty surprising. I ended up giving this match a 77. Then we get a promo. We get Josh Alexander coming to the ring, and he's talking about his frustrations when Dirty Dango come out. And he definitely throws some good lines before Oleg Prudius comes out, which is the former Vladimir Kozlov, for those paying attention at home. Dango did say, Josh lost to Hammerstone because Dango softened him up. And if you recall last week, I said Dirty Dango had a great match against Josh Alexander, so this was really good that they followed it up. This match was not great. It was a squash for sure, which makes Oleg look awful, but he is also just a big hired goon, less than a wrestler in his TNA performances so far. But the promo was great, and it definitely sets things up going forward. I gave it a 70 overall. Then we get a really fun match from Ace Austin taking on Frankie Kazarian. Frankie Kazarian got in Ace and Bay's face following their matches at Sacrifice, where they both lost, and Ace Austin challenged him to a match. This was really good match, super good match, back and forth, a lot of reversals, a lot of moves you really don't see from both of these men. Just really, the crowd couldn't get enough of this. It was super solid. I had a great time. There was a really awesome submission, a chicken wing from Frankie Kazarian, which was done out of a strange pinning combo. I think it was a victory roll. But just the way that he transitioned it into the chicken wing was so flawless, I never saw it coming, which was great. And I would say Austin had control 90% of the match, but here we are. Frankie Kazarian, of course, gets your win. Next, we're moving on to something we've kind of seen before. It's AJ Francis taking on Joe Hendry, which, you know, I've been a little down on AJ Francis, but I gotta be honest, he kind of won me back here. He did some good work. So Francis ended up costing Hendry the digital media title when he took on Crazy Steve at Sacrifice. So it's a renewed interest in this. It's not just the same old thing, not the same recycled thing. The match was okay. AJ Francis showed me a little more here, but what really got a lot of good points was Francis has been begging Rich Swann to come to his side, and Rich Swann is super duper good guy. Well, not anymore. Rich Swann said, screw it, I'll be a heel. And he smashed him with a chair. Joe Hendry never saw it coming, and Francis gets your win. Pretty cool match, pretty cool concept. Rich Swann looked like he was having fun because he's still so charismatic, but he was like, yeah, whatever, I did it, you know? So it was a very good match. Then we move on to Spitfire, which is Jody Threat and Danny Luna, your knockout tag team champions, taking on Bea Moss and Vanna Black. This was a very good squash match in general. It was MK Ultra taking on Decay, or MK Ultra and Decay both came out to ringside. Both have contractual rematches because Decay defeated MK Ultra and then quickly hot potatoed the titles back to them. So they never got their rematch, and MK Ultra has not gotten their rematch since Sacrifice. So setting up some interesting stuff here. I love their finisher. It is a cooler tag team version of the Luna Landing, but faster and safer. But I was just like, man, it just looks like it destroys people. I love it. This match got a 77. And then we're going to our main event, which was Steve Macklin, Trey Miguel, and Zachary Wentz taking on Nick Nemeth, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Trent Seven. This was a pretty good match. Pretty back and forth. Everybody got their stuff in. Everybody was in and out. A lot of quick tags, which I like to see. Macklin missed a dive by accident, and he ended up taking out Trey Miguel, which pissed off Zachary Wentz, and the Rascals left Macklin high and dry, and he just ate every finisher. And so there, the faces won, basically just beating up poor Steve Macklin. And after the match, the system showed up and beat the living hell out of absolutely everybody, which I liked. So overall, I give this match a 79. As far as TNA Impact, oh, I did forget there was an Ash by Elegance promo on the soundtrack with Allen Angels just announcing she's going to have her third match next week. It was fine. This show gets a 79.42. Yes, the math. Shoot math. Now we're going to move on over to AEW Rampage. This is the 15th. Of March. We're going to kick things off with Orange Cassidy and Trent Barretta taking on John Silver and Evil Uno, something I feel like we've seen a bunch of times as of late, but they're really trying to bring home that Cassidy and Barretta can work as a functional tag team, even though they're each other's regular partners. Good comedy spots here. There was a lot of good comedy in this match, which I should have expected, I guess, but I didn't. John Silver putting his hands in the pockets to block Orange Cassidy. Dark Order doing an accidental hug, which really bugged them, which was fun. We do end up getting Cassidy and Barretta the win here, and I gave this match an 81. This was followed by a package on the Righteous, which was really good. They were like digging a box out of the desert, and it was just really creepy, and that music is so perfect for them. and it just gave off a cool, spooky kind of vibe, which I liked. We'll see where that goes. Our second match of the night is Mariah May and Toni Storm finally teaming together, I love it, to take on Little Mean Kathleen and Kayla Sparks. Great names, LMK. This was a fun squash. It basically set up May and Storm versus Perrazzo and a mystery partner that they did reveal, which ends up being Thunder Rosa, which, thank God, we had been saying for weeks now on this program that Thunder Rosa is too good for these squash matches, and she was like just having these matches that just didn't need to happen, didn't help her at all, didn't help the person she was wrestling, and she was too good for it. She needed a better spot, and this is definitely it, for sure. I wonder if they'll bring up their history. They have fought each other a bunch, including in Impact, you know, maybe a year or two ago. It wasn't that long ago. So we'll see. It was probably like 6 years ago. But we'll see what happens with that. This match was great. Mariah May doing the old school Toni Storm gimmick was a lot of fun as well. I gave this match an 83. Now we move on to a very good match between Konosuke Takeshita and Commander. And Jericho was on commentary, and he complains about Commander doing a lion salt, which was really funny. He says he gets one free pass. I did appreciate Jericho losing his mind over that, because it was a very nice lion salt he did. Close near falls the entire match. There was just so much back and forth, and I like the fact because, you know, Takeshita does, you know, more the Japanese style, and of course Commander more Lucha Libre, and the big difference between the two is the Japanese style tends to be more power-heavy, more fierce kind of feeling, more Way of the Warrior, more stiff, where the Lucha side is almost prettier. It's a lot more fluid, and to see these two styles going at it, it kind of looked great. It looked real good for both of them. And you were wondering, maybe Commander will finesse his way into a win. He did not. Takeshita definitely wins this with a spinning Falcon Arrow, which was very, very fast with a very big whiplash effect. So hopefully everybody's good there. But the match was solid. I gave it an 84. Then we move on to our main event. Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, and Roderick Strong taking on Top Flight, which is Action Andretti, Darius, and Dante Martin. In trios action. I did like Jericho comparing Roddy to Dean Malenko in his prime, because I like that. I think Roddy is very much like Dean Malenko, just he hits a little harder, you know? Pretty good match, pretty good overall. I would say it's interesting what they do with Taven and Bennett. They make them eat so much crap and be a little silly, and there was less of it here than in previous weeks, but it's still there. And I like and dislike it, because sometimes it works where it's like, man, these guys are like shitty, but they still always win, and that works. But they're not shitty, they're awesome, so I don't know. They do it well either way, but the Undisputed Kingdom does get the win here. After a combination of moves with Roddy finishing it off at the end with the end of Heartache. So that match gets an 80 out of 100 from me. The show overall gets an 82%, which is a lot of fun. I like that all these shows are pretty strong so far. All right, now we're going to move on to Friday Night SmackDown, also taking place on March 15th. And we're going to kick it off with The Rock doing a sing-along. And a lot of people are going to roll their eyes at this and be like, damn it, The Rock again. Final Boss Rock. But I thought this was fantastic. He sang a song about Cody Rhodes, about his mom, about his wife, everybody. Everybody got, you know, a little shine on this one. And the crowd was so into The Rock. Love The Rock. It was unlike every other crowd he's seen previous. They could do nothing wrong. He acknowledged that. And he definitely went on a nostalgia trip with them because he debuted as Flex Cavana back then. It was pretty cool. So he did a sing-along. It was better than a lot of the promos he's done prior. It took up a lot of time, but I would ultimately say it benefited their WrestleMania main events. I gave it a 97% for this promo. It was better than his previous 2 weeks, and equally as strong as as far and effective, I guess, is what equally as effective as when he first came out. First match of the night, we're going to get Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo taking on Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro. This is a tag team title qualifying match to see if they get into the six-man match at WrestleMania. This match was cool. This was a really good match. There was a really awesome top rope slam, which was just wild, by Garza and Carrillo, where they were standing on the middle ropes, and they had, I think, Cruz, and they just held him up and threw him off in a what would be equivalent of a scoop slam, but just like the way they held him and the balance that they all had was wild. It was cool. And I also really like that Garza and Humberto won this match, and they won it clean. No cheating at all, which whenever a heel team that is really dastardly just straight up occasionally wins, I'm always a big fan of that. I gave this match an 86. We followed this up with Grayson Waller taking on Randy Orton. This was a very dull match. It was the same old, same old. Really all it was setting up Logan Paul's match for WrestleMania, which turns out is going to be a triple threat with Logan Paul taking on Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. But as far as this match, it was fine. It's just, you didn't give Grayson Waller a lot of time to shine, and Randy doesn't need any of this, but it was okay. So I gave it a 75. Then we move on to Santos Escobar taking on Dragon Lee, continuing their story from last week. Santos Escobar will get the win here. This match, for as much as they have been pushing Dragon Lee, he just got squashed a little too much here. I think it was a little too one-sided and a little too short. Had it gone a little longer and he was kind of fighting back and still kind of got screwed out of the win, that would have been fine. But I think it was just too short of a match and a little too one-sided. But it was them, so it was good, and I gave it a 76. Now we're moving on to another match in the Tag Team Qualifier Tournament. This is Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, New Catch Republic, taking on Pretty Deadly. Yes, boy, we love Pretty Deadly here. This match was so good, and I love actual tag team wrestling, constant tags, which both of these teams are great at, and New Catch is really catching on because all their moves feel more crisp, and I just feel like their timing is even better, so I'm loving them, but the airplane spin from Tyler Bate, we must talk about it because it went on so incredibly long, insanely long. The crowd was so into it. Charles Robinson was the referee on this, and he really sold this well, where he was like, I don't know what to do. He won't put him down. And he was like getting dizzy and just like with his head watching them spin around. Little things like that can add so much to a match. And we love Charles Robinson. He's great. The crowd was so incredibly into this match, real hot for it. We get a double burning hammer, which is really cool. And that was also another really crisp, really fast finisher. So Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate will advance in the tournament. As much as I love, as much as we love Pretty Deadly, I gotta say this was a well-earned win for New Catch Republic. And now our fifth match of the night is our main event, which felt weird because I forgot The Rock had been out there for like 45 minutes, which was Bayley taking on Dakota Kai. This match was really good until it wasn't. Bayley starts really hot. There was an awesome move she did where she pulled Dakota into the ropes between the middle and top rope and did basically a cutter, but she banged her head into the mat and it bounced her in such a brutal looking way. The match got thrown out, of course, because, you know, damage control just got to run in and hit everybody. It was good, though. It set up their match for Mania, which doesn't have, like, the most build as far as Io confronting Bayley herself. So we did get some of that here, which I appreciated. Overall, SmackDown, while it was less matches, does get an 84% from me because, I mean, from the sports entertainment side of things, they check those boxes a lot. So we have that. Now we're going to move on to the March 16th AEW Collision, and I was super excited for this opening match. It is Katsuyori Shibata taking on Brian Danielson. Good Lord. What a fun dream match. I thought this match was great. It had a ton of back and forth. There was so much slaps, so much exchange of chops, so much standing there, like, just hit me again between both guys. Great respect, even though it was a violent respect for everybody. Nigel's commentary, of course, makes this so much better. Anytime Danielson, the clam digger, is in the ring, we have to hear Nigel talking a bunch of smack, and there, my goodness, this match was long. There was a lot of smack talk. I do appreciate that Shibata kicked out of the Bunsaiku knee, which was awesome, and then he was able to survive the lapel lock and get his feet to the rope. Really good back and forth. Danielson would end up getting the win here, which makes sense because he's going to be heading towards Osprey and Dynasty. But there was a handshake at the end, and everybody was very happy with their performance. Shibata was over the moon. I mean, this match was fantastic. I, who scored nothing high, gave this a 94. I love this match. Then we move on to Julia Hart taking on Trish Adora for the TBS title under house rules, of course, for the House of Black. Really smart house rule for this one, basically, because later on in the night, the House of Black will be taking on the Infantry, so whoever loses here is banned from ringside. It's a good move. So we get this match, and the loser's not allowed during the main event. There was a pretty cool split-arm submission that I really appreciated, and there was a pretty moonsault at the end. I'm really liking Trish Adora. She did the move I'm talking about. She did a split over Julia Hart's body facing down, doing like a Rings of Saturn kind of maneuver. Really good stuff. Just a weird, flexible kind of thing. Which was made look even better because Julia Hart is also flexible, so they were both in this weird pretzel position that probably two other women wrestlers probably couldn't pull off. Julia Hart does win here, which was really cool. So it made the Infantry feel like they had no shot in hell, and we'll get there in a minute. I gave this match an 80. It did a lot of good storytelling elements as well. Then we move on to Daniel Garcia versus Lee Moriarty. It's a good match. It's okay. Like, I mean, I like both these guys a lot, and they're both really good, and I felt like this was so back and forth, no one was ever really ahead on points. It was just like, who's going to eke this out? Daniel Garcia is the one who eked it out. He got him with the heel hook at the end. He tapped out. So, I mean, I can't blame him here, but yeah, this match, for the people involved and the quality of matches they often put on, I was a little meh. So I gave it a 76. Then we get Pac versus Aaron Solo. I like what Pac did here. So this was a great squash. Solo had 2 to 3 minutes of hope. Like, he came in strong right off the gate. Pac was giving him shit about his physique and just being an overall bastard, as he should, gimmick-wise. I like what Pac did here. Pac won. Once he got control of it, he just slaughtered him until it was over. But I appreciated that he got on the mic, told Tony Khan, I told you I wanted competition. You better give it to me. I'm looking for trouble. Give it to me before I go create my own trouble, which was a great thing to do. So while the match wasn't great, the point of the match and the segment overall was really good, I gave it a 75. Now we move on to a match that really excited me when I heard it was announced for the day. We got Claudio Castagnoli taking on Lance Archer. There was chance of meat for this match. Really good back and forth. It was super good match. Everybody got their stuff in. Lance looked good doing his dive to the outside. Claudio looked really strong. Reversed, good smart reversals from Claudio here, because sometimes he's just like such a bruiser. It's like, no, he can think. He's got a good ring IQ, and he got to show it a little bit here. The ending of this match was fun because the whole thing they'd been building to is, can he do the spin to the spin for Lance Archer, and he's so tall. And Claudio got maybe one or two revolutions into it when the Righteous hit the ring, causing a DQ, so Claudio gets the win technically. He also got his ass beat for a while. Really good match. Danielson would come out, try to even the odds. Doesn't work that way. 3-on-2 is still not very good, so Shibata came out with a chair, calling back to our earlier match. It was really strong here. I like that. I want that trios match. It was great. And I also want Claudio to do that airplane spin, man. I want that spin. I need it. He did do it. It looked hard, so I want to see it, if he can really get, like, let's say 10 repetitions of it. And then we're moving on to Kyle O'Reilly's back. He's taking on Brian Keith here. I love both these guys. This was a pretty good match. I appreciated Brian Keith here, who kept doing moves focusing on the neck of O'Reilly, which is what he was out with for like 2 years. He had neck surgery, fused a bunch of things, and he looks good. But Keith's like kind of just like shrugging it off, like, I'm sorry, man, I gotta target your head. I gotta target your neck. Why wouldn't I? Good back and forth here. A lot of O'Reilly, which was good. Need to put him over, need to get him back in the good graces of the fans, let them remember how great he is in case they somehow forgot. There was moments where it looked like Keith was going to get the win, but of course he does not. O'Reilly does win on his own, but the Undisputed Kingdom did come in to celebrate with him, saying that, you know, it was cool, he can do it on his own, but he doesn't have to celebrate on his own, which was fun, and that took us home for the evening. I gave this show an 84. Oh, wait, I forgot the main event, because I'm an idiot. Don't you worry. Well, the show's still going to get an 84.75. This is hard doing it by yourself, Lawrence. Our main event that I've completely somehow forgotten is the Infantry taking on the House of Black with Julia Hart, as per the earlier match, in a wild card match to become tag team, enter the tag team tournament. This was violent. This was really violent. House of Black felt slighted that they weren't just put in this match, that they had to win their way into the tournament, because they were one of the most dominant trios champions of all time. And Shivani did argue, you know, trios champions aren't the same as tag champions. They're similar, of course, but they're not the same. So they're lucky they were in it. Good old Schiavone putting some heat on people. I enjoyed that. But they beat the crap out of the Infantry. They didn't even get out of the gates. Beat them really bad before the match even started, which was smart. The Infantry did their best to fight back, but they never looked like they were going to win. They went back and forth, and to the point where they kicked out of a bunch of stuff, but it was clear they were running out of gas. There was a point where Buddy Matthews actually pulled them up to avoid the three count. And the storytelling was just so good. We do end up with... Oh, yes. There was a really gross pile driver on the table from Brody King. I don't remember which member of the Infantry it was to, but the table did not break under all that weight, which was very surprising, and it looked brutal and stiff. I'm sure they were fine, but it looked so brutal, made a great noise, as you'd expect. But what no one expected, and maybe you should have, was Mark Briscoe lurking around with a chair. And Mark Briscoe came out and hit Buddy Matthews with a chair when the ref wasn't looking. The Infantry advance. They were able to pin Buddy Matthews. Really good storytelling here, and that's the thing I really want to focus on, is that this whole show had great storytelling, which is pretty wild because they're not known for it over there at AEW. Really good stuff. I liked it. I gave this match a 92, and we did finish things off with an Edge promo. I gave an 88. It was a lot of the same old. He just talked. He explained what Spike was in the box. Spike is a new nails in a board kind of character. Like Janet, he mentions Janice. He mentions Barbie. We're talking about Cactus Jack. Talking about Abyss. And he's just basically saying, I made a new nail in a board, and here we go. I'm going to hit you in the head a million times, Christian, and that was it. It was a pretty basic, but it was a telling promo, so it was fine. But yeah, Collision getting an 84.75. So, that being said, I'll do mine first because I have them ready to go. No, I won't because there's power of editing. Here we go. or I just talk the whole time while I pull it back up. Because I don't care. So Lawrence's show of the week was Raw, getting an 88.75. It's very cool. His top five matches of the week. Number five, the Kabuki Warriors and Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark, getting an 88. Number four was Rio versus Willow Nightingale, getting an 89. Number three, Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan, getting a 91. Number two, the Gauntlet match from Raw, getting a 95. And number one was Jay White taking on Darby Allin, getting a 95 as well. So there you go. There's Lawrence's scores. I don't disagree with any of that. Those matches were fairly solid. And for me, for my show rating, coming in fourth this week was TNA with a 79.42. Coming in third was Rampage, which was still really good, with an 82%. SmackDown came in second with an 84, and beating them by just a small margin, AEW Collision gets its win here, 84.75. The top matches for me, and I do want to mention, there's a lot of good honorable mentions both on my list and Lawrence's list, but for me, you know, Bayley versus Dakota Kai was right outside, the LWO versus Carrillo and Garza, right outside, Commander Takeshita, right outside, and even AJ Francis was right outside. Finally, you showed me something, AJ. But my number five match was Claudio Castagnoli taking on Lance Archer with an 87. My number four match was Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate taking on Pretty Deadly with an 88. Number three was Frankie Kazarian taking on Ace Austin with a 90. Number two was The Infantry taking on the House of Black with a 92. So much good storytelling there. And number one, it has to be it, of course. It's Bryan Danielson taking on Shibata with a 94. I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast. Make sure you send any emails, any questions to mathofthematch@gmail.com. We're on Twitter. We're slowly growing. We're very new. Very classically trained in podcasting. Very new on Twitter. So find us there at Math of the Match. We'll follow you back. And yeah, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep having fun here. I'm having a blast. I know Lawrence is. Let us know what you think, if you disagree, if you agree. I'm going to send this off now since my cat is angrily standing on the computer. That's probably not a good thing. She looks so mean. Anyways, that's it. Lawrence, I miss you. This is not easy by yourself, although it's not easy with you either. So, I don't know. Good night.